This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Dr. Doris Fields. She's from the Santa Fe chapter of the NAACP, where she's the chair of the Martin Luther King Committee. And we're here to talk about, on the Martin Luther King holiday, the MLK birthday commemoration at the Roundhouse, which is happening here in Santa Fe at 12 noon. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much, and thank you so much for having me.
It's my great pleasure. Tell us about this commemoration. This is an annual event that's been going on for some time.
Yes, it's been going on, we think, about 25 years or so. We've been going at the Roundhouse. It's always been very good.
And what are we doing this year?
Every year we have either an essay contest for youth. We really want to focus on youth a lot. I guess that's what I want to say, focus on youth a lot, because they are our future. They're the ones who will provide the leadership. They're the ones who will be the standard bearers. So we focus on youth either by highlighting community service work that they've done, or by how they perceive themselves, how introspective they've been able to be, and what they feel like Dr. King's work and life does for them.
And so some young people will be featured today, and there will be some awards.
Yes.
As well as a keynote speech by a UNM professor.
Yes, actually the awards will go to two young people in Santa Fe who at Capital High School. May I mention their names?
Sure.
Okay, they are Ana Ochoa Luna, who is a 12th grader at Capital High School, and the other is Natalie Beltran, who's also a 12th grader at Capital High School. They have both been active in the Habitat for Humanities. One of them has been involved with Adelante, with Civitan Club, with Santa Fe Shelter. They both are just doing some very outstanding work.
Very community-minded types of young people.
Very community-minded. They are both in the National Honor Society. So we know that in the National Honor Society, they have to do some community service work. But these two young teens are going above and beyond what they are, you know, actually asked to do in Honor Society.
So they will be honored today, and it's part of the NAACP commemoration of Dr. Martin Luther King. Tell us more about the NAACP in Santa Fe. This is not exactly the capital of African-American culture in the United States, but there's an active chapter. What's happening, and what kind of activities do you guys do?
We have 129 members. We have a regular adult memberships. We have youth memberships, youth in college. One of the things that we've been working to do, and I just want to say this right away too, is we've been really working to get more youth involved. We have been working now with Dakia Fame Hudson at the Santa University of Art and Design.
Yes, she's amazing.
She is absolutely amazing. She just steps right in. She's very clear, very focused, and quite smart, and a serious worker. So we've been trying to build up our youth branch with the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. We also, every year we have Juneteenth celebration, and we have a Kwanzaa celebration. We have our Martin Luther King Jr. commemoration. We are a very, very active group, actually. I should just say, too, that we're a very multicultural group. Multicultural, multigenerational, various spiritual understandings and beliefs, practices, etc.
If you don't mind, I would love to hear a little bit more about Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is a fairly recent phenomenon that is quickly becoming a tradition, I think.
It is very quickly becoming a tradition. Thanks for asking about that. Kwanzaa was started in 1966 by Dr. Maulana Karenga, who is a history professor. One of the things he wanted African Americans, descendants of Africans enslaved in the United States. He wanted us to have a way to celebrate who we are, have understandings of who we are. So he developed Kwanzaa. It's 7-day commemoration or 7-day celebration. Begins the day after Christmas. Starts the 26th of December, goes through the 1st of January. There are 7 days, 7 principles. There are various symbols that go on the Kwanzaa table. I can tell you those if you want.
But yeah, what are the principles?
The 7 principles, one starting with day one, is umoja, which it's done in the Kiswahili language.
Okay.
But it's umoja, which is unity, and that is about having unity with our family, with our community, coming together, loving one another. The second principle, second night, is kujichagulia, which is self-determination. So we are encouraged to figure out who we are and what we need to do and do what we need to do for ourselves, define ourselves. For so long, African Americans have been told who we should be, how we should be, even what we should be called. And Kujichagulia says, no, we say how we will be called. We say who we will be.
And it's interesting to have self-determination following the celebration of unity, because mm-hmm. when you have young people understanding both unity and introspection, it's important to think of those things together.
Yeah, I think umoja and kujichagulia are very important links for all of us. And actually, as I go through the other principles, you'll see that the links are there as well. But I think you're absolutely right. I think you're onto something in terms of having those two come right together for youth, having youth to understand how we are as a collective, because we're a collective, we're a world collective. I'm not talking just about African Americans. I'm talking about human beings, and I'm talking about trees and animals and so forth. So we're a world collective, so it's important for us to understand ourselves in unity in that way. But it's also important in terms of the history of Africans enslaved in the United States. It's important for us to be able to understand our history and know that we are in a position to determine how we are, how we are perceived, and how we present ourselves.
So those are the first 2 principles. Where does it go from there?
From there, it goes to ujima, which is collective work and responsibility. So we want to be able to work with one another. And again, the community is broad, but we want to work with one another to achieve whatever our goals. The 4th principle is ujamaa, which is cooperative economics. So we support one another economically. If I have a business, then I want you to support my business. You have a business if you sell clothes, if you sell meats or foods or whatever it is you sell or whatever it is you're doing that is economically important for you, then it's important for all of us in the community to come together, unity, to support one another economically. And the next principle is nia, which means purpose. Very important for us to understand what is our purpose. Who are we? What are you here for? Understanding that we didn't just get thrown here. We're here for a purpose. And it's important for us to be able to understand, figure out what is our purpose. What is we're supposed to do? The next principle is kuumba, which is creativity. So we're supposed to leave the world in a much better condition than we saw it. In order to do that, we have to take into consideration what is there and use our own creativity to make it better. The last and final principle is imani, which is faith. So we want to have faith, ensure faith in others, but faith in ourselves too, but faith in our community as well.
So those 7 principles taken together are such a really fascinating mix of spiritual and practical. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it must be a really powerful thing to do in community and to do in family.
It is an absolutely powerful celebration to have us come together, understand ourselves in celebration of ourselves. I do it. My wife and I do it at home, within our family at home. And we also do one, a public one as well. And 1 7-year period, I had a 7-year initiation where I made a commitment. And that's the other thing, is to commit to live by those principles.
Yeah.
That's really the big piece, is to live by those principles. So I had a 7-year process where I made a commitment to live by each of those principles. The first year, I made a commitment to live by umoja, the second by kujichagulia, and so on.
Very, very interesting. And so coming out of that after 7 years, did you feel different? Did you feel sort of whole?
I felt incredible. Actually, each year it was amazing how I had chosen to do the 7-year initiation. So the first principal, Umoja, was my son and I came to, my son and I are very close anyway, but we came together in a very special way that was just very, I don't know, indicative of the whole point of Umoja. And then each year after that, every year, the principle for that year was manifest throughout the year for me with lots of people. So, yes.
I was going to say, I would imagine that the way the world works and the kind of synchronicities that happen when you devote yourself to something, mm-hmm. that for each principle that you're looking at, there would be sort of semi-magical opportunities to put that principle into action.
Yeah, absolutely right. Thanks for pointing that out. For example, for collective work and responsibility and creativity for Kuumba as well, for both of those years, even though they were years apart, I collaborated with other artists in a way that I had never collaborated before, putting together just what I think were really tremendous pieces of work.
We're talking to Dr. Doris Fields from the NAACP, and we've sort of gotten sidetracked on Kwanzaa, but it's really interesting because there's a kind of, I think sometimes people have a kind of societal attitude about Kwanzaa, like, oh yeah, that's a made-up holiday or whatever. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about it, one can see that the power of it comes from the fact that it's rooted in traditions that are, in fact, ancient.
Mm-hmm. It is rooted in traditions that are in fact ancient. And the other thing that I would mention is that, and you said earlier when you first started talking about it, that it's a, you know, it's new, it's fast growing. It is in fact the fastest growing holiday in the world at this point.
Very
and has been for the past several years.
Now, is it, what parts of the world? I mean,
everywhere.
In the United States. Really?
Everywhere. They're celebrating. I shouldn't say everywhere because I'm sure there are places that it's not. But in general, I can say all through various countries in Africa, Central and South America, Germany. I mean, what we know is Africans are diasporic, and so we're everywhere.
Yeah.
And many people have come to understand the importance or gravitate toward the importance of Kwanzaa and the celebration. And so people are celebrating everywhere.
Are people who are not of African origin also celebrating?
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So let's go back to Martin Luther King. Now, you grew up in Memphis in the 1950s, 60s, mm-hmm. and were really there during the civil rights era. What was that like for you as a young person?
I was there. I was in Memphis until I was 13. So I was there during the 50s. And that was actually a very interesting time. I was raised in a community that was all black, an all-black community. All my teachers were black. My principal was black. All of our neighbors were black, all of that. And there was a sense of security, really, a sense of nurturing, so that my mother had to go to work. Didn't matter. There were neighbors around who made sure that we were fine. We never had to worry about being outside. We never had to worry about, you know, really much of anything. So we were supported and cared for. In school, I had teachers. My teachers were young women and men who had graduated from historically black colleges and universities. They knew what we were going to face as young black people. So they demanded that we understand ourselves and that we comported ourselves well, that we learned. They were insistent on that. There was no way that you were going to come out of our school and not be aggressive in your thinking and in your learning. So I had that kind of upbringing until I was in junior high. And in junior high, I moved to Indianapolis. And in Indianapolis, I was in a very different environment where it was mixed race. We were black and white in the neighborhood and in the schools. Very, very different.
What was that like for you?
It was a little bit, it was exciting, interesting. I was inquisitive about it. But it was also a little unnerving because while in the black school, I had teachers who cared about us and they made sure we knew that. When I had teachers who were white, and all of our teachers were white in when I was in Indianapolis in junior high and high school, they did not care about us learning. The feel of it was just very, very different. It was very, very clear.
And they favored the white students.
Oh, they absolutely favored the white students. Yeah, there was no question there.
So how did you respond to that? How did you react to it as a kid?
You know, one of the things that's really hard for any parent of a black child is to know that that child is going to face racism at some point in her or his life. As parents, no matter what our background, as parents, we want to protect our children. And so sometimes we protect them by not letting them be exposed as much as possible. But another way we protect them is by giving them skills to deal in the world. And that's one of the things that happened for me is I gained skills from our neighbors, from our teachers at an early age to be able to function in a world that was hard. My mother worked for white people, and so I would sometimes go with her, and so I was exposed to some white people. So I wasn't afraid of white people, but I knew that they were going to be different, and that was my expectation, and it was the reality.
So when you went to, for example, high school, mm-hmm. in teachers who were really prejudiced against you and your fellow black students, and mm-hmm. they favored the white students, did that make you work harder? Did it make you want to slack off in your studies? Like, mm-mm. what happened?
Oh, you just work. Yeah. You work. What we knew is that we would have to work twice as hard and that we would have to be twice as good or more than any of the white students. We knew that. And so we worked hard. I mean, I'm sure there were students who didn't, but for the most part, we worked hard.
Now, we're going to hear the final speech of Martin Luther King in a few minutes, and I wondered if you could talk about how Martin Luther King and his work influenced your own life.
Okay. Dr. King's vision for America, to me, has to do with really peace and nonviolence. And I understand that that sounds very trite. But for me, it's critical that I focus on peace and I focus on nonviolence. One of the things that I know that I have to do is I have to access what is compassionate in me. I know that I can't change others, that what happens or what has to happen in order for the world to be better, in my view, is it all begins here. It all begins in me, that I have to be what I want to see. And it's a practice. It's not that, oh, I'm gentle, I'm loving, I'm compassionate, and I'm sweet and wonderful with everybody. No, I'm not all the time. But it is the practice. It is what I want to be. It is how I want to be. I try to gravitate toward people who are sweet and wonderful and kind. I try to make that, you know, a part of my life. I try to stay away from people who are not able to do that at this point.
I think when you call it a practice, there's a lot to be said about that because you don't always feel compassionate. You don't always feel loving and sweet.
Right.
And in those times where other really negative emotions come up, mm-hmm. that's when the practice is really important.
Mm-hmm. That's when the practice is really important. I had an opportunity, I think a very wonderful opportunity to work with Thich Nhat Hanh in silent meditation. A very important practice to be introspective, to be able to go inside and stay inside and find out for oneself how one doesn't let the outside come in. One of the courses I teach is stress management at the university, and I use the metaphor of the tarantula that somebody said to me too. If somebody puts a tarantula in your hand, you have lots of options. You can scream about the tarantula. You can say, look at that. Look what they did to me. You can believe that person, what they did to me. Oh, this tarantula is going to bite me. It's going to crawl up my arm. What am I going to do about it? You can do that, or you could put the tarantula down, or you could put the tarantula back in the hand of the person who gave it to you. It's important to put it back into the hand of the person who gave it to you. It's theirs.
Yeah.
It's not yours.
Dr. Doris Fields is from the Santa Fe chapter of the NAACP. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, the Martin Luther King Jr. birthday commemoration is today at the Roundhouse in Santa Fe in the Rotunda at 12 noon, and lots of good things going on there. It's a very packed program, including a keynote speech.
Yes, we have a keynote speaker who is Dr. Trofenia Peel Eady at the University of New Mexico. She is quite a profound speaker. I happen to hear her speak several times. She is an associate professor in the Department of Language, Literacy, and Sociocultural Studies. She is going to talk about how Dr. King's work really impacts us as human beings, but also his influence on children, on youth, and how important it is for, as we were talking about earlier, how important it is for youth to be able to understand what in their community supports them, what in their community helps them to move forward, how it's important to achieve academic success, social success.
Well, that's all today, and I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we're going to take a break right now, and after that, we are going to hear the final speech of Dr. Martin Luther King. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.